The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Finally, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have been given an award for deciding to have no more than two children. The London-based charity Population Matters called Harry and Meghan role models because they restricted the size of their family and it would reduce the impact on the environment. Harry and Meghan were awarded £500 for a charity of their choice.
Bizarre world. What a strange time. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for tuning in. I'll give you a look at that. That was the BBC. We'll talk more about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's award. And I do want to clear up some misconceptions that are being promoted out there. And that's what I try to do. I try to pull back the veil for you, right? Try to let you say, okay, this is what everybody's saying. Here's the language that's being used. But you know what's really being said? You know what the underlying current is? Here, take a look at it. And I'll give you that look coming up in just a second on that story. Thank you for your prayers for the Holy Father. We've been praying for him, right? And I mentioned to you yesterday, you know, so often we think about him or, well, think about the Pope or your bishops, your cardinals, and sometimes people like to complain. And I often say, instead of complaining, why not pray, right? Holy Father had been under the weather for a while. He had surgery. He had to stay in the hospital longer than usual. And that to me is not always a good sign, especially when you're up in age like that. But good news. We prayed. He's been released from the Gemelli Clinic in Rome after 10 days. You know, the surgery was 10 days ago. They resected a part of his colon. He made his way to the clinic, to the Basilica of St. Mary Major, and he loves this basilica. And he gave thanks to the Virgin Mary, and he knelt there and he prayed before the image of Our Lady of health of the Roman people. And he's deeply Marian, this Holy Father, and often goes there to pray. When he got home, he went immediately to Twitter, and he sent out a message to the world saying, thank you all. I want to thank those who have been close to me in prayer and affection during my hospital stay. Let's not forget to pray for the sick and for those who assist them. And we should be praying for all those who have that very compassionate ministry. So here's a quick report from Relevant Radio's Ashley Narona. She'll give you an update. She was on this morning on Morning Air.
And yes, I'm happy to report to you that Pope Francis is safely home back in Vatican City at Santa Marta, where he will then spend some time convalescing after his procedure. So you may recall, John, that initially his hospital stay was estimated to be 5 days. And of course, he went in for his surgery on the 4th of July. That stay was then extended to 7. After that, it was announced that at one point he did have a fever, and the stay was finally extended to 10 days due to the advice of doctors who wanted to allow our 85-year-old Pope or 84-year-old Pope to recover fully in a controlled atmosphere where they could monitor him. And so then this morning, without a prior announcement, Pope Francis did leave Gemelli Hospital and went back to his home in Santa Marta. And this was after receiving, he went through the normal discharge procedure that all patients go through, and he received a report of good health, and of course is at this point able to walk on his own without the assistance of a wheelchair. So he's going to continue to be under strict supervision of his treating doctor, Dr. Burnaby.
All right, that was Ashley Narona and much more. We'll continue to follow the Holy Father's recovery, and I'd ask you just continue to pray for him as well. He's certainly going to need your prayers. In other news, a panel of the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled yesterday that a federal law forbidding the sale of handguns by licensed dealers to people between the ages of 18 and 21, that's unconstitutional. Yeah, did you hear that? The majority said that there is nothing in the Second Amendment about an age restriction. So they said that, you know, at the time it was written, the Second Amendment assumed that kids even 16 years of age would have access to guns. So the law in question, which was passed in 1967 as an effort to bring down gun violence, something which obviously it did not accomplish. Just take a look at the numbers this weekend in Chicago, right? It only applies to licensed dealers. And that means that people younger than 21 can legally buy handguns now from private parties, or they can receive them as gifts. And the ruling conflicts with a ruling from another appeals court, which upheld the law, calling it reasonable. And they said it was a reasonable effort to try to rein in gun violence. It's not clear if the government is going to appeal the ruling either to a full session of the court or to the Supreme Court. But we'll see. If you're a gun owner, I thought you might be interested in that. Also, the Olympics this year. I was talking to my colleague Patrick Alog here, who is our resident sports fan. Him and John Morales, host of the morning show. Boy, sports is their other universe that they'd like to hang out into. If you are headed there and you are a Catholic athlete, you might not be able to go to Mass. And I saw the story this morning. I don't know if you heard it or not. Catholic Olympic athletes who go to Tokyo, you're not going to be able to go to Mass. The Archbishop of Tokyo has asked Olympians not to visit churches while they're there because of the possibility of spreading COVID-19. I understand the bishop. I'm sure they're very cautious. People are coming from all over the world. But, you know, if you have a test saying you're clean or you've been vaccinated, why can't they go to church, right? In fact, as an athlete, not only am I training my body, but I'm sure I would be praying very hard that the Lord will sustain me in you know, being able to compete effectively. I mean, you heard no spectators are going to be allowed there because of the resurgence of these new cases. So it's already going to be hard on these athletes as well as the local economy. I think Japan's going to take a hit on this one. It's billions of dollars in money that's spent on these Olympics. And we know those tourist dollars, ouch. Now, Patrick, you've been following this a lot as well. I'm sure you heard that story about no Catholic athletes being able to receive the Eucharist. That's a bummer.
Yeah, that's very disappointing.
I'd have to travel my own priest.
Well, maybe they travel with the priest and maybe have them as a quote-unquote coach, maybe.
Yeah, right,
but still,
right.
It's very disappointing. I mean, on Morning Air, they had a gymnast, Grace McCallum.
Yeah,
she's not even going to be traveling with family, obviously, there. So, but yeah, going to Mass, that's just unfortunate. And I mean, obviously, they'll probably get a dispensation, you know, for the situation. But still, I remember hearing this interview with not a Catholic priest, but a pastor. And they definitely look for spiritual help while they're there during the Olympics.
How do you think not having fans affects competition? Because
as TV viewers, we're sort of used to it here in the U.S. Yeah. We went through it last year in 2020, watching it without football games or basketball or baseball, basketball.
On that point, I don't mean to step on you.
Yeah, no problem.
But on that point with the NFL, it's like there were fans in the stadiums. I mean, you heard the roar of the crowd.
I wonder if NBC is going to do that.
The audio mastery was just absolutely amazing for the NFL. I felt like I was watching a regular season
game.
They
probably are going to be working on that. But the thing is, I wonder how they're going to fake it on the screen, because with baseball or football, they put all these, like, you know, fake fans or whatever. I think NBC will add in the fake crowd noise.
Yeah. Well, there's two things here for the athlete, I think. One, when it comes to the athlete, it may be a blessing, you know, because they may have nerves getting in front of all these people and running. And if they're just running against, you know, 12 other people or competing in a smaller contest, maybe the nerve factor will be gone and they'll have greater concentration or better focus. Maybe that's what. On the other side, a big crowd can fire you up, man. It can give you that extra energy, adrenaline, make you run.
We've seen it in many of these Olympic events, like in track, like in swimming, for example. Right. The energy in a swimming event is incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Or maybe watching a basketball game or gymnastics, when you hear those cheers. I mean, it's definitely motivating. They're going to have to try to figure out how to do this by themselves and maybe with their teammates if they're on a team.
We'll see how the U.S. fares. We always do well, grabbing a lot of gold.
You want to take a guess how many Olympic athletes?
You tell me. I don't know. I have no idea.
613. I think this is like their biggest delegation they've ever had in a games where they have not hosted.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we do well. We'll see what happens. It's all eyes will be on it. It might be a good reprieve after COVID-19 too.
Yeah,
you know, it's a way to get some unity and rally around something at least. One final story here, and I do want to share with you, if I could, a little bit about Meghan Markle and the Prince. But before I get to that, Chick-fil-A, I love. I love their chicken. You know, a lot of people love Popeyes. I mean, chicken is all over now. Like, McDonald's has got the chicken sandwich. Everybody's in on chicken, right? All the burger joints are in on chicken. If your child is going to the University of Notre Dame, you might be able to get some crispy chicken sandwiches there through the auspices of Chick-fil-A. But that's now being brought into question because of a vocal student group that's opposing Chick-fil-A on their campus. What is wrong with them? You know the reason? I mean, like, again, don't you have better causes to fight for? Huh? How about a child in the womb, right? How about, you know, the pollution in our oceans? I mean, I can think of 100 causes to get behind, right? This open letter stated this regarding Chick-fil-A, right? And Chick-fil-A was a company that was formed. You know, they wanted to give glory to God, and they wanted to do it through their enterprise there. Chick-fil-A, they say, this open letter says to Chick-fil-A, states that they have a serious ethical issue, primarily because of their giving, which is characterized as queer-phobic, right? It includes the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Paul Anderson Youth Home, and the Salvation Army. They give to them, and people have a problem with that. At this point, it's anyone's guess if those, you ever see those cows holding those Eat More Chicken signs? They're going to show up near the Golden Dome. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, Chick-fil-A under fire right now. There's a lot going on, too, in Cuba. There's a lot going on in South Africa. A lot of stories for us to dive into. But I want to share with you a conversation Morning Air had a little bit earlier today. There was a piece in The Federalist that I came across. It was written by the daughter of Rachel Campos Duffy and her husband, Congressman Sean Duffy, by Evita Duffy. And I'm so impressed by this girl's ability to write, and really by the Duffy family. I think they're just wonderful Catholic models. But for vowing to only have two children, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, they received an environmental award, right? They've gotten an environmental award. And, the group, dubbed estranged ex-royal, role models for their enlightened decision. That's what they were looked at. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a moment. I'm going to tell you all about that. And I want to clear up some misconceptions regarding it as well, because there's an argument out there that having smaller families reduces our impact on the earth. And look, you can call in, we can talk about it, right? Future generations, they want to flourish, and we don't want to deplete the environment. There won't be enough food. Overpopulation's an issue. This is something you're hearing over and over and over and over and over again, right? I want to address it, and we'll bring some clarity to it. So if you have somebody who you love that's saying, oh, yeah, I'm limiting my family to two children because it's environmentally right, you might want to stay tuned. We'll get into that right now. But I want to give you a glimpse also into what is happening in South Africa. Rioting and looting and widespread violence has begun there in Johannesburg and Durban and spread to a whole bunch of other cities. And we're seeing this chaos, very much like what we saw in our own streets at one point in time, right? And rioters stopped traffic on the highways. They incinerated at least 30 trucks. And there is absolute chaos down there. So please keep them in your prayers. I'll fill you in on what's unfolding there, but also in Cuba, as you know, right? Protests took to the streets. John Morales had an excellent interview on Morning Air a little bit earlier today, and I want to share part of that for you. It'll give you with you. It'll get you up to speed on all that's happening. Listen.
Good morning, Jorge. Great to be with you for the first time on Morning Air. Welcome.
Good morning, John, and thank you for having me, and to take this opportunity to speak about this reality, because even if the dictatorship, the Cuban dictatorship, it has been there for more than 62 years, certain aspects of the situation are unknown. And thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Jorge, as a Cuban-born journalist, what's your reaction to what we just heard from Senator Marco Rubio from his perspective on these historic protests in Cuba, as well as in South Florida and now even Tampa? They are protesting all over the island.
Well, I agree with Senator Rubio. It is the drama of the Cuban society, the fragmentation of the family and the lack of freedom. But I agree that the main problem of the Cuban society is the lack of freedom. And it's something that I would like to clarify, because the press, especially certain parts of the press here in the United States, were reporting the situation, talking that the people were protesting because of the COVID-19 situation and because of the lack of food, and it's not like that. It's true that the trigger of the protest that we are seeing right now, it was that situation, the terrible handling and administration and managing of the resources of the Cuban regime. But the bottom of everything, the root of everything, is the lack of freedom. So I agree totally with Senator Rubio.
Jorge, there's reports of police everywhere on the streets, and yet we heard the chants at the beginning. No tenemos miedo. We are not afraid. What goes through your mind when you hear those chants of the Cuban people?
Well, it's very powerful chant, like you said, because actually there was a protest in 1994, but was just in Havana. And the government, the regime, controlled the situation very easily. But right now, the situation is totally out of control because the reports are that the protests took place in 20 cities of Cuba, towns and cities. And everything started in San Antonio de los Baños around 11 a.m. on Sunday 11th, July 11th. And in this town, hundreds of Cubans took the street and marched through the town. And the slogans, like you said, were not afraid. And also they were chanting another slogan, Motherland and Life, Patria y Vida. And that's the title of a powerful song that damaged a lot to the Cuban regime. And of course, freedom. And town by town, through the social networks, the message of rebellion spread through the island. And like I said, at least 20 cities imitated the San Antonio de los Baños protest, but with greater intensity. The marches moved to other towns and to larger cities, such as Havana, which is the capital, Las Tunas, Camagüey, and Santiago de Cuba, and another rural towns in Havana. And thousands of Cubans took the streets, and the Cubans stood in the capital of Havana. I have reports that next Monday, there were more people gathered in the capital than on Sunday. And the people is very brave right now. They are losing fear, and that's important. That's the main thing about this, that the people is losing fear. And again, it's very important.
Jorge, you were back in Cuba in 2015 to report on the Holy Father's trip, on Pope Francis's trip to Cuba. What was that experience like? Do you think it gave you a little bit of a sense of what the conditions are today on the ground for a people that are saying, hasta cuándo, or how much longer?
Well, actually, the situation, when we compare the situation when I went to Cuba in 2015, and now it's worse. It's worse because the government always, it has been inefficient. The government never have to give the people the resources to live or the opportunity to live, because what we are talking here is about opportunities. And the situation is worse now. And the COVID-19, it has made the situation worse. Worse than it is right now. And it's worse. The situation right now, like I said, is worse than. And it's something that we have to reflect if the Cuban regime cares about the Cuban people. Because actually, they have been receiving a lot of money from the doctors that they have around the world. And they have been receiving money because when Obama went to Cuba, he opened the embassy and he gave more opportunities to the regime. And having more money, the situation now is worse. It's curious.
We're joined by Jorge Diaz-Diaz, Cuban-born radio host and journalist, giving us some perspective on the events that have been happening in Cuba, and not just in Cuba, but in many parts of Florida, and in fact, in other parts of the world. Jorge, there have been some reports of 140 Cubans reportedly detained, including a Spanish journalist, and they've disappeared after these historic protests.
Yeah, actually, the repression right now is turning brutal. And the reality that was kept secret just for the jails against the political prisoners, right now is being applied through the entire population. And we are seeing torture and beating. Actually, there was a priest that he was hit by a baseball bat. Father Castor Alvarez. He tried to defend two young people, and he was beaten by the police, and he was arrested. And the regime is using tear gas, and is using bullets, real bullets, and rubber bullets. And we are seeing how, despite the misery that the Cuban people is facing, you start to see how the government right now is giving the police resources and weapons that you can say, wait a minute, but these resources, these people is giving to the police, and that costs a lot of money, you know? And, it's a very difficult situation with the repression. Hundreds of people disappeared, and I believe that the situation is getting worse. It's going to get worse. And actually, something that the police is doing right now is that it's going houses to different houses of young people and trying to recruit those people for the repression against their own people. Young Cubans recruited by force to repress their own people.
There's been a very strong reaction here in this country, especially in South Florida. Miami Mayor Francis Suarez said that this communist ideology has failed. He's actually calling on the United States to intervene in the situation in Cuba. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, the situation here, I mean, the reaction here, it has been very strong. And I believe that the Cuban people here in the exile is doing what they have to do, sharing the pictures and sharing the repressions. And, since the people in Cuba right now, they have no internet, something that we have to do here from the other side is sharing the people, sharing the pictures, so the rest of the world will know the real face of the dictatorship. And I believe that with this, the people around the world, that in some other time they just look to another place, even with the repression taking place in Cuba, they will have to look right now what is happening. But it's not enough. I believe that it's not enough, John. It's not enough, John. I believe that the politicians here in Cuba, the politicians here in the United States, the political class, the Cuban political class, have to ask this administration for a stronger position in the Cuban topic. More sanctions, maybe. Do you remember when the entire world gathered against South Africa? Something like that must happen in the Cuban situation. Otherwise, the Cuban people by itself, they never are going to get rid of that system. It's a combination between politicians and the people here sharing the information. It's the most that we can do.
What do you feel that our country can do to stand behind the Cuban people during this series of events? As I hear the "We Are Not Afraid" chant, I can't help but think of Pope John Paul II right before the fall of communism in Europe.
Well, I believe that more sanctions to the political class in Cuba should be implemented, because the dictatorship in Cuba is sustained by two things. First is the repression and the fear of the people. And second is the money. And the only way to hurt very bad to the people in Cuba, the political class, is implementing sanctions. The Cuban people is going to be bad anyway. That's for one side. And the other side is to push for a humanitarian intervention, because the people is dying because of COVID-19 situation. And the Cuban government are unable to handle the situation. The Cuban regime is unable to resolve the situation of the COVID-19 because it's right now a humanitarian crisis. And Jorge, the Cubans are dying by thousands.
In the final minute that we have, a quick thought on the response from the Catholic Church in Cuba, the bishops, the priests on the ground there on the island.
Well, there was a statement published by the Bishop of Miami, Thomas Wensky, and he spoke about the situation and about the right of the Cuban people to have freedom. And the church in Cuba, in the same way, they describe the situation, the situation that is happening. They said that the answer of the Cuban government is not ignore the claiming of the people. The people is claiming for freedom. And they said also that the people have the right to protest peacefully and that the government cannot implement the repression that is going on right now in the island.
Well, Jorge, thank you so much for your perspective, your Cuban perspective on the situation that's going on in your homeland, the call for freedom. Thank you so much for being with us on Morning Air, Jorge.
Thank you for having me.
All right, my thanks to John Morales. Great insight into what is unfolding in Cuba. And let's pray for peace there. Let's pray for an end to communism in that nation. Let's pray for a better way of life for those individuals. Stay with me when we come back. I'll bring you up to speed on Prince Harry and Meghan Markle and their children.
And what does Biden even mean?
The issues that matter most.
As a way to tackle Roe v. Wade.
Right here.
And if they don't stop them, we're closing the border.
The Drew Mariani Show is live on Relevant Radio.
Finally, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have been given an award for deciding to have no more than two children. The London-based charity Population Matters called Harry and Meghan role models because they restricted the size of their family and it would reduce the impact on the environment. Harry and Meghan were awarded £500 for a charity of their choice.
Limit our family so we can fight climate change, so we won't impact the environment. I think it's absolutely silly. They've chosen to limit their family, and they did it publicly, to ensure a better future for their children and provide a role model for other families. That's what a Population Matters spokesperson says that they did, right? And, of course, they were given this very nominal award. That's peanuts. In 500 pounds to them is nothing. But the argument is that having a smaller family reduces our impact on the earth, and then it provides a better chance for all children, right? Their children and future generations to flourish on a healthy planet. Ugh. That is so frustrating and so untrue. And when I heard that, I said, look, I got to bring clarity to this. The world has a fascination with the royals, but also they're selling a myth. They are selling a deception. That's what's happening. Back in the late 18th century, I'll give you a little history, early 19th century, there was a British man. His name was Thomas Malthus. And I spoke about him in the past. The name probably rings a bell to you, right? He was very famous for saying that humans were doomed to an ever-repeating cycle of prosperity and population growth followed by economic crash, right? That's what happens. You know, you have prosperity, your population grows, and then you crash because there are too many mouths to feed. The power of population, he said, is indefinitely greater than the power in the earth to produce a subsistence for man. And that's wrong. I mean, he's been proven wrong now for decades. That kind of thinking was picked up in later centuries. Came to its peak in the writings of Paul Ehrlich. He's the guy who wrote that book, The Population Bomb. You remember that? the book and the media hype about it brought about these incredible fears in the general population. People really thought that the planet was doomed, right? Oh my gosh, what looms for our kids? I'm so worried about the future. It had this hype that because the world was going to be overpopulated, there'd be massive droughts in Africa and images of starving kids and Americans' mindsets changed and having a lot of children. You know, we used to have huge families in this country, right? Big families. Suddenly people began just to have two kids. And, of course, no country went further than China. They went down to one child. They had a one-child policy. We know what's happening now. They reversed that from one child to two policy child, and now they're expanding that. We're seeing Russia and Italy and nations all over depopulating. Russia's paying women $10,000 to get pregnant. You know, I mean, think about that. So the mindset I hope is changing as reports about declining populations start coming out, even in the mainstream media, and the impact, the negative impact that the decline will have on people's lives. But look, there's still a number of holdouts on the whole overpopulation myth, and maybe you've bought into it. Maybe your kids buy into it. I don't know. There's some very intelligent, very famous people who've bought into it. Maybe I shouldn't use the word intelligent here, because Britain's Prince Harry and his American wife, Meghan Markle, announced 2 years ago, that they were going to limit their families to just two kids. That's it. Just two children. You know why? We don't want to use up more resources. We don't want to add to global warming. That's the argument, right? That's the mindset. So a British charity, as you heard, it's called Population Matters, gave them an award. Why? Because they're role models. They are role models. They have this enlightened decision. And my gosh, what an inspiration for so many other people. We should follow in the minds of these very cultured people. But what Population Matters and other groups like them are not saying is that population control has very serious consequences. It does. Fewer children actually does not equal fewer emissions. And population control has always been problematic because of the coercive methods that have been used to impose it. And also, look, the other thing here to think about, too, is just take a look at our history. Take a look at technology. Take a look at where the population is today. Over 7 billion people worldwide, right? Yet we're feeding everybody. We have the resources and the capability to feed the world. I mean, America's the breadbasket of the world. I mean, look at the natural resources that so many different nations had. If we want to, there's no problem feeding people. And thanks to modern agricultural techniques, we are able to do that. So the fact that there was going to be global starvation, of course, Malthus had got it wrong, and so did Ehrlich, and I'm afraid the prince and his wife are getting it wrong, too. I'm joined right now by James Herson. He's a New York Times best-selling author, and it's good to have him with us today. He writes for the Left Coast Report. That's a column for Newsmax, and you can find them at Newsmax.com, and he covers everything. Hollywood, politics, entertainment, culture, you name it, it's there. But follow him on Twitter, at the Jim Jams. That's his Twitter handle. Or go to his website, jamesherson.com, or check him out, because he's also a very gifted musician. He's got some great music, and you might really enjoy. James, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Oh, it's great to be with you, especially on this topic of overpopulation alarmism, because that's the way I look at it. And it's interesting, Prince Harry, the guy who doesn't want to be a prince, decided earlier this month he was going to be a journalist. And he did an interview where he was the interviewer of Jane Goodall. Jane Goodall, the primate expert. And in that interview, he brought up this topic and he said, he only wanted two children at maximum, no more than two. And as you pointed out, they gave him an award for that, which if he was really virtue signaling, I suppose he would stop at one or maybe zero. That somehow that's virtuous not to have children. I think the first important issue for Christians and for Catholic Christians and for people that care about values is the idea that every single child, every single human being in child form is an award in and of itself, a gift from God. God tells us we are created in his image. He tells us to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth. Every child is a gift. And children are the source of happiness for people, everyone that is a conscious, sane human being, it's our own children, it's the children of relatives, children in the community. Children have innocence, happiness, laughter, and hope. And in our country, in our Declaration of Independence, which is our birth certificate that we just celebrated, talks about the pursuit of happiness. And children bring so much joy and love and happiness. Why would we ever, as a free people, want to celebrate limitations on that. And the other thing is, of course, this point of view, as you pointed out, yep. is short-sighted and dangerous. Yep. It's short-sighted because Thomas Malthus, as you pointed out, his essays took place at the end of the 18th century, mm-hmm. and he couldn't conceive of the future. He didn't realize what was coming was the Industrial Revolution. Right. So he saw nothing but doom and gloom and mainly right. famine.
Right.
And what happened, the Industrial Revolution came, and it brought about amazing prosperity, amazing sanitary processes, sewage systems. This was something that Malthus yeah. couldn't conceive of. It changed the world. It yeah. took away all of his presuppositions. And then, yeah. People forgot about that failure. And that's when you mentioned Paul Ehrlich, which yeah. happened in the late 60s. And it was like a reboot of Thomas Malthus yeah. because yeah. he was also talking about famine. And the problem, when I said it's dangerous, it leads to these policies which, when they're conjoined with government force that is no longer viewing the dignity of an individual, we have things like the China one-child policy. What did that end up with? Forced abortions, forced sterilization. Yeah. Evil. And so it's so it, this again, it hits our good versus yeah. evil meter. When people, and the word we use a lot now in the social media is gaslighting, which is a form of the spreading of mythology, the spreading of narratives. This idea of overpopulation being a danger is a form of gaslighting, and the latest form of it is to use climate change. Yep. In other words, yep. Isn't it wonderful that Harry and Meghan are helping reduce climate change by only having two kids? And it's ludicrous. But I'm so glad you're helping dispel these myths.
Now, you're so right on so many different things. Unfortunately for Harry and Meghan, their climate crisis right now, I mean, they're big proponents of climate change, has fallen on deaf ears. And, if they're truly concerned about global sustainability, I mean, we're a little family of four. They live in a small little place. I was reading an article today by Evita Duffy. She made a great point. She brought up the point that, look, they wouldn't live in an 18,000, 19,000 square foot mansion with all these amenities, and all this, carbon footprint. No, they got separate wet and dry saunas and game rooms and theaters and arcades and libraries and gyms. No, they wouldn't fly on private jets. They would be more concerned about their carbon footprint and live in a much smaller place. You're talking about four people in a giant place like that. I mean, this is part of the great deception that is out there. But, they carry a lot of swag. When it comes to, the royals, there's a fascination with them, especially with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. And Oprah did that interview with them as well. What is it that people are so caught up with celebrity, in particular this couple? And, I guarantee you that what they're saying here, the attention they're getting, is going to influence other people to do the same thing. Yeah, let's not have any more kids. It's going to be good for the environment. We're going to be like the prince and his wife.
No, you're absolutely right about their influence. We know that it's a multi-billion dollar industry, the world of celebrity endorsements, whether they're athletes or movie stars or famous musicians. Products are sold because they say they're good. That means that they do have persuasive power. And Harry and Meghan, unfortunately, have a lot of persuasive power. It's because people are fascinated with the royals in general. They're fascinated with the children of Princess Diana, who is kind of a legendary contemporary royal. And the marriage of Harry and Meghan, because they kind of moved away from the royal, sort of renounced their lineage.
Right.
With her having been an actress, she being biracial, It's just focused so much attention. And part of the reason is because we're a culture consumed with this reality show form of entertainment, and they are the perfect replacement, at least this is the talk in the entertainment business, for the Kardashians, which are now, you know, ending their long-running show. So Harry and Meghan are hoping to basically cash into that largesse with having a reality show. But that it is unfortunate that, I mean, it would be wonderful if they were influencing people in an edifying direction. But unfortunately, Harry and Meghan have been captured completely by the wokerati crowd.
You got it.
They're deeply invested in wokeness. And so, you know, Harry almost teed this up so that he would get this award. And no one would give the award, but some organization that's dedicated to depopulation.
When we come back, we'll talk more, James. Let me grab a few calls, too. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Sandy just emailed us, sends that. Isn't Meghan 40 years old or close to it? Another reason she might be only limiting her family to two. When we come back, our conversation will continue. I'll clear up some more of these myths right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
That's right. Getting you plugged in to all that is happening in your world, hopefully giving you a moral perspective on it. If you enjoy the broadcast, tell others about it. And if you missed anything or want to share it with someone, you can always hit our podcast. I saw a story that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, they received an environmental award, right? And look, I believe we should be good stewards of the environment. So don't take this out of context. Yeah, absolutely. I hate the pollution in our oceans. I want to protect our ozone layer. I want to make sure our water is healthy and our air is clean, of course, right? So Prince Harry, Meghan Markle, they got this award for pledging to have only two children. You know what the award was for? $695. Yes. And they can give it to a charity of their choice. But here's the thing that got me. Okay, big deal. They got an award. You know, I don't agree with it. I think their position is wrong. They only have two children, and that's all they're going to avail to have. And I think they have a one-month daughter right now, and their two-year-old son, Archie, made a lot of headlines when he was born. But the argument here is that we're only going to have these two kids. We want a better future for our children. We want to be a role model. We want to make sure that other families will have that same opportunity. We want to reduce our carbon, you know, impact on the earth. You know, we want future generations to flourish on a healthy planet. And it all sounds great. I mean, what's wrong with that? I think that's great, but I think it's false. It's really bad logic here, you know. You take a look at this concept that more population equals, less food and starvation, that it will actually impact the environment. That is not the case at all. Look at nations with huge populations right now. We tend to think of places like Mexico that are overrun with people. Their fertility rates are falling, and they're falling very quickly right now. Europeans are losing people. My own blood comes from Italy. I look at the replacement rate of that nation. Russia is entering a demographic winter. Korea, Japan, they're close to that too. China, of course, we know the difficulties that they're facing. We have these gender imbalances now because they limit the population, and you've got more men than you do women. It has a terrible ripple effect. And we were talking, James Hurston is my guest today, about Thomas Malthus, an Englishman, from early 19th century, late 1800s, he made a mistake. He came up with this theory that human population grows geometrically while food production only grows arithmetically, right? So he was wrong. He thought that human population grows in a sequence like 2, 4, 6, 8, 16, et cetera, right? Where the food production would go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He didn't count on things like natural disasters or wars or plagues, pandemics, right? There was one in 1908. Remember that one? The Great Spanish Flu took tens of millions, hundreds of millions of lives, let alone technology and what that has done, the Industrial Revolution, as James points out. So The other thing, too, and I want to say this to anybody right now who's contemplating limiting their family, don't do it. I have five beautiful children. God graced me with my wife, and I had them in like 6 years. And I was a little nervous. How am I going to feed these families, these kids? My board operator here, same thing, I'm sure. Not my board operator, my call screener, Jim, who's on the phone. Every time you have a kid, you're like, oh, my gosh, can we afford this, right? And we have like 6 and 5 years. My grandmother gave me a great piece of advice. She once said to me, for every child God gives you, Drew, he'll give you a loaf of bread. And what she meant to say by that means every child God gives you, he's going to provide for it. You know, if he blesses you with that life, just trust in him. He'll provide for you. And I have testimony. I can share story after story of how God, in his generosity, has provided for me. The creativity, the genius that God has given to us as a species, as a human race, to create, we could certainly overcome many of the challenges that Meghan Markle and of course, Prince Harry think that we are facing. So say a prayer for them. They've got a powerful platform. They can do a lot to impact people. You can join me, too. It's 888-914-9149. I'm joined by James Herson. And, James, let's go to the phones. We'll grab a couple quick calls here. We'll go to Paul in Rhode Island. Paul, it's good to have you on the air with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's nice that you take my call. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a comment that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was one that wanted to eliminate big families. That was her mantra, yeah. And that's why that all got established. I wonder how you feel about that.
Thank you, and we'll certainly talk about that. Again, I'll go back to, there was a great piece written by Evita Duffy. I should put it up. And she made the case, James, you probably read the same article, that you know the racist and the classist goals of the 20th century population controllers like Sanger, who forced sterilization, on people, who, you know, was very prejudiced. She was a huge advocate of this, you know, and they would advocate not just limiting fertility, but of course they had this environmental agenda as well. Your thoughts for Paul?
Oh, sure. And Paul is right to point out Margaret Sanger, the founding mother of Planned Parenthood, who Adolf Hitler admired, partially because she viewed human beings as expendable and felt that sterilization and forced birth control, were positive things. And it's interesting that would dovetails with the discussion about Thomas Malthus, because he advocated certain fixes, you know, to reduce the size of families. But he said if it didn't work, that he advocated bringing back the plague, he advocated, and then denying medical remedies for people who caught the disease. In other words, reducing the population by allowing people to die. And these kinds of thought processes, of course, fly in the face of faith, Christian and Catholic alike, but the idea of the dignity of the human person, of every human person, and we can have a respect for the dignity of the human person and, as Drew pointed out, be stewards of the environment. We can do both. Yeah. So it's a myth to say that somehow, limiting family life and having policies like the China One Child policy are the way to solve human problems. We have a lot of problems to solve. Yeah. We have war and poverty and famine, and they're never ever solved by eliminating people.
Right.
And so that I think is profound. And yes, Margaret Sanger was, and it's called eugenics. She was a eugenicist, and she wrote extensively on that subject, although it's amazing, there are fact checkers out there, so-called, who will say that that's not true, when in fact it actually is.
James, I only have a couple minutes left. The Olympics are underway, and it's a time of great patriotism. People love the American flag. They're often draped in it when they win their events. They race around the track or down the slope or wherever they tend to win their award. You and I were talking during the break, and I thought you brought up a great point. I'd love to get your perspective on this. You know, you take a look at places that are oppressed, that don't have freedom. For example, Cuba. We saw so many take to the streets there, waving the American flag. I'd love to get your perspective on what you saw.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a supreme irony, almost a poetic irony, that we, as you point out, people who are oppressed, people not only in Cuba, but in Hong Kong, other parts of the world, that they see the American flag as a symbol of hope and freedom, which it is. And so they wave it. And then we have misguided souls, talented, athletic, misguided souls who purport to represent the United States of America and go to the Olympics and then turn their backs on the flag, in one case turning their back on a 90-some-year-old World War II veteran who is playing harmonica, very close to my heart, somebody playing my instrument, and turns their back. He was playing the Star Spangled Banner. This is a product, unfortunately, of this propaganda campaign to basically taint symbols of America, like the flag, like statues of Abraham Lincoln or Thomas Jefferson, and like our founding documents. This has to do, we have to have an educational reform to bring back a form of civics.
Amen to that. Well, James, thank you for your time. I know people can follow you at the Jim Jams or jamesherson.com. And of course, you're right for Newsmax and a lot of other places. I'm grateful for your time, and I'm even more so for your perspective. Thanks for being here.
I'm grateful for you, Drew. God bless you.
God bless you. James Herson.